AI Data Bytes, powered by Denodo. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to AI Data Bytes, powered by Denodo. This is the show where we deep dive into the real infrastructure, architecture, and strategic choices defining the era of enterprise AI. I want to start today's episode with a scenario that is keeping a lot of tech leaders up at night. Imagine your engineering team spent 6 months building a brilliant strategic AI application. The workflows are smooth, your beta users love it, and the business case is completely proven. You're ready to scale. Then suddenly, your preferred model provider changes their API pricing structure, updates their access policies, or quite frankly, just falls behind technologically because a competitor drops a vastly superior model. Now you are faced with a brutal question. Can you switch? Or have you accidentally hard-coded your company's future around a single vendor's roadmap? As AI becomes deeply embedded into enterprise operations, a dangerous new form of vendor lock-in is emerging. Today, we are exploring why digital sovereignty isn't just about where your data physically sits anymore. It's about maintaining the operational freedom to choose, to switch, and to optimize your AI models. To help us untangle and navigate this, I'm joined by Ravi Shankar, Denodo Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer. Ravi, welcome to the show, and I'm really excited to have this conversation today.
Me too, Neha. I'm really excited to be here, and I have a lot of stories to discuss, so let's get started.
Wonderful. So let's jump right into it. So why is it becoming critical for companies to design their AI architecture to be completely agnostic of any underlying large language model?
Well, that is because of a lot of news lately about many different vendors, especially like, you know, one related to Anthropic mostly. And so that is what is kind of dictating why this should happen.
Interesting. So during one of our previous conversations, Ravi, you were telling me about Anthropic being stopped by the US government from shipping some of their models. What was that all about?
Well, as you know, a few months back, Anthropic mentioned that they came up with the very famous Mythos model, which exposes vulnerabilities in software. And it was so powerful that they did not want to release it to the general public, simply because hackers could cut into some of the software that is already prevalently used. So they released it only to some of the top vendors so that way they can use the model to plug in any gaps. And after that, just recently, they came up with a dumbed-down version of that model, and they called it Fable 5. And they released it, but soon after they released it, they were asked by the US government to shut it down.
Ah, okay, interesting. So the release of this specific model, Fable 5, was it a sensitive release or not so much?
Well, we don't know if it was sensitive because the whole idea was that they were going to dumb it down to a point where hackers cannot be using it to exploit.
Right.
But the story goes that as soon as it was released, one of Anthropic's competitors called the Treasury Secretary and told them that there is still some vulnerability. And the Treasury Secretary tried to call Anthropic and was not able to reach them. And then they basically, within 1 hour, asked them to shut it down. And so there it goes.
Wow. Thank you for sharing, Ravi. So how did the sudden enforcement impact Anthropic's internal teams?
Well, what was imposed is that it was an export control directive. So the U.S. government basically said that you cannot ship the model outside the U.S., which is what normally this export control directive means. But in this case, they made it even more restrictive that only U.S. citizens can use. And even if you're not a citizen living in the United States, you cannot use it, which means even the employees who are not citizens working in Anthropic could not use it. So they had no choice other than to shut it down because they can differentiate about who's using it and whether they are U.S. citizen or not. And so they had no other choice, and the internal teams were left in the dark after this was done.
Oh, wow. I mean, understandable, but still a drastic move for sure. So is no one still able to use the Fable 5 model?
Well, I think they worked it out with the US department. And so they were able to now release it, or they were in the process of releasing it. So I think customers would be able to use it now.
That's good. That's good to know. Thanks, Ravi, for sharing. Now, speaking of Anthropic again, I recently heard Anthropic found itself in the government crosshairs. So what is the story with Anthropic and the Department of Defense here?
Well, this was actually a while back in March.
Okay.
Anthropic wanted to the US government not to use its models for purposes other than peace. So they did not want it to be used for wartime efforts and so on. It so happened that the government wanted to use the model for whatever they chose to do. And so both the companies did not come up to an agreement. And hence, the government had to impose this supply chain risk so that way they cannot use the models for the government or any contractors that are working with the government.
Okay. That's interesting to know. So speaking of supply chain risk, why was this deemed a risk?
Well, it is a big one because, first of all, the underlying story here is that you might have heard about the Venezuelan drug boats, and the Department of Defense was using the Anthropic models to identify those drug boats. And
right.
Anthropic portrays itself as a responsible AI company. They did not want that to be happening. So they now at the subject of the supply chain risk, which means they cannot sell to the government, and similarly, the government cannot use this model. So it's kind of an impasse.
That makes sense. So thank you for sharing. So now that we are at the standstill here, so what was the alternative platform then? Who was it replaced by? OpenAI, I imagine?
Yeah, you correctly guessed, because mm-hmm. OpenAI and Anthropic are at each other's throat.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Anthropic was shut down, OpenAI saw the opening. They worked with the government to have their models being used. And so there you go. So now OpenAI is going to be used within the government.
So when a vendor pulls the plug like this in such situations, Ravi, how do companies even stabilize themselves?
Well, it is very difficult for companies. Imagine even a government is kind of at the mercy of these large companies like Anthropic, mm-hmm. right? So there was actually a story by a smaller company that had about like 60 developers, and they were using Claude Code to build their AI application. And looks like they had some vague usage policy violation, and Anthropic shut down their access. And even more strange was that the only recourse for the company to get their access back was to file some kind of a Google form and wait for Anthropic to come back. So whether you're government or you're a small company, it looks like everyone is at the mercy of these large frontier model companies.
True, Ravi. So speaking of cost, though, I heard that Anthropic is quite an expensive platform. So do you agree?
Yeah, that's what I have heard too. So, you know, Anthropic, in fact, was used by one of the companies. They were actually sued by one of the customers, alleging that they were, for the subscription tier that they had, looks like they had a premium subscription plan. I think it's about $200 a month or so. And they were actually using fewer tokens, but somehow Anthropic was calculating too many tokens, mm-hmm. which was not the case. And they were not able to accomplish what they needed to do, even at that particular tier. And they ended up suing Anthropic, saying that it was just too expensive for them to be able to operate at this particular level. And the interesting part is that this escalated into a class action lawsuit. So it looks like many other customers who are in a similar model were facing a similar subscription plan, were facing the same challenge of spending too much. And they had to all try to find some recourse with Anthropic.
Wow, that's a great story right there. And speaking of this, so what are the alternatives to platforms like Anthropic?
Well, definitely you have OpenAI and mm-hmm. Meta and so on that are alternative, but even that can provide a challenge. So you know that Microsoft very early on was an investor in OpenAI. They spent about or invested about $1 billion in OpenAI back in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And OpenAI, which was kind of leading the charge, but since then they have fallen behind, and now Anthropic has actually pulled ahead. And what this has happened is, like, Microsoft, since it was very solely tied to the OpenAI, that has pulled Microsoft down with it. And they find themselves behind the Google in the terms of the AI war. And as a result, Microsoft stock is now depressed by a third.
So we've discussed quite a few stories here based on different LLM models and, like, you know, stories around companies and such. So can you synthesize the challenges across these stories that you would like to highlight?
Yeah, so I would synthesize three different challenges over here. You know, the first one related to many of these companies being heavy-handed, being acting like an oligopoly. So that is one aspect of it. The second one is related to the cost. You know, we heard about the story of the companies suing Anthropic. And the third one is about the performance. So we talked about how Microsoft is now left holding the bag because Anthropic has surged ahead of OpenAI. So to me, these three, oligopoly, cost, and performance, seems to be the challenges coming out of all these stories.
Wow, yeah, well summarized, Ravi. So thank you for sharing this. I'd like to know a little bit more about these challenges that you mentioned. So diving deeper into each one of these, let's start with oligopoly. Tell us more about this, please.
Well, oligopoly, the economic definition of that is just a very few concentrated vendors are handing together and they are imposing the market standard. So if you look at the providers, you have four, OpenAI, Anthropic, Meta, and Google. And they are all exerting influence, even to the extent of opposing the government itself. And this particular economic means is definitely something that is the governments try to shut down, because ultimately the customers pay the price for it, because they will at some point maybe collude, raise the prices. So the customers will be left in a limbo, holding the cost. So it is a bad thing even for the LLM industry, because you have just these four big dominant ones.
True, true. Totally agreed with you there, Ravi. And now, how about the challenge with costs?
Well, the cost, as we kind of heard, is prohibitive. And there are some information that is coming out again in the news. Like Uber, for example, they had allocated X amount of budget for the entire year, and looks like they actually burned it down in a couple of months using Claude Code. So, yeah, so it seems to be like a real challenge out there.
Yeah, true. I mean, companies are facing all sorts of different challenges with, you know, establishing these LLM models and managing them effectively. So I totally hear you. So now that we've covered the oligopoly aspect, the cost aspect, before we jump into the performance aspect, did you have any other examples you would like to highlight?
Yeah, so Uber is a big company that actually ran out of money over here. But also I've heard Microsoft is even bigger, right? So, and they actually shut down the Claude code for one of their departments in their experiences in the devices division, because it was just costing them too much. And I also heard recently that AWS had a challenge using, from a cost perspective, using Claude. And so they actually, to balance, invested in OpenAI about $100 billion. So it looks like they are hedging their bets too.
Ah, okay, interesting. Can you tell us about the costs incurred for this particular sort of AI usage?
There was one metric that I saw, which is like the top 1% of the AI users can run up to $90,000 per year in cost. So imagine, right, put this in perspective, you could be an employee who's earning less than that in the US, but you could be falling within the top 1% of the AI users, and you're running up these costs, which is even more than what you get paid. So it is even more expensive than hiring an employee to do the work.
True, an eye-opener for sure. Well said, Ravi. And now coming to the performance aspect, can you talk to us about this particular challenge?
Yeah, so you know that OpenAI was the top one for a long time, but then Anthropic came out of OpenAI and they started their model, and now they seem to have the upper hand in terms of the performance compared to OpenAI. And Google Gemini, they released their version 5, and then that became news that it was even much better. So it looks like these guys are, you know, one is at the top of the charts at one time, and then another one beating them in another time. So it seems to be one or the other going back and forth.
That totally makes sense. And I think the LLM race is on, as you mentioned. So it's tough competition out there for sure. So speaking of this, how long does it take for one model to supersede the other?
Well, about 5-6 years back, it used to be take years for one model to be trained and brought up another version. But nowadays, that gap has shrunk very drastically into months. So what I hear now is in just a matter of 3 months, they could be releasing a new model that is well-trained and different than the previous one. So which means you could have one company that is in the top of the leaderboard in now, and in 3 months from now, there could be another company that is coming up on the top. So that timeline has shrunk very drastically, so that you could have powerful models at different points of time within a matter of weeks or months.
Totally, totally, Ravi. And that checks out with what we are experiencing in day-to-day lives here as well, like with the different platforms becoming more popular and easier for usage than the other. So that brings me to my next question. Do we all need to use the same model in this situation?
No, there are alternatives that are available out there. So the analogy that I will actually give is that you don't need a PhD to tutor your kindergartner, right? So you want to marry the right LLM with the right use case. And so you want to, if you're using a simple query, something like building an itinerary for a 5-day vacation in Hawaii, you can use a lower powered model. But if you're doing like a drug discovery, you can have a more powerful model. So you need to be able to marry the right model with the right use case.
Totally, Ravi. And that was a great example. And now that we have discussed these challenges, do you have any key takeaways?
Yeah, the key thing that is coming out for me across all of these three challenges that we talked about is that you need to have LLM neutrality. So it is not only a particular model, but even the provider as well, because you cannot trust one guy over the other that we saw. So companies who are tying themselves to the hip with a particular model or a particular provider will basically lose out on the performance, because we know that something else can become more powerful, or from a cost-benefit perspective, because we know some models can be more expensive than the others. And also the cost of model fit, which means that you want to use the right model for the right use case, and you're missing out on that. So all these things can actually provide significant challenges. But there's one thing that comes to my mind, which is the absolute one, which is in terms of the vendor lock-in. So this actually can tie yourself to a particular vendor, which means eventually your cost could escalate in the future.
Very well said and very well summarized, Ravi. Thank you for sharing this. Now, moving to the next section of our discussion today. So what can companies do so that they're not tied to a particular single model?
They need to find different ways to switch their LLM models and their providers, so that way they are not tied to the particular one. And to me, that means they need to be able to use the right architecture for it, and ensure that there is the cost fit, there is the cost model fit, there's the performance fit. So you need to take a look at all of these ones and make sure that you can swap out one model for the other, depending upon whatever use case you're running and depending upon how much budget you have available.
Totally, Ravi. And now we've spoken about the, you know, big four or the, you know, the top four frontier models available in the industry right now. Are there any alternatives to these models at the moment?
Yes, open source models are becoming more popular. You might have heard about DeepSeek. They made news last year where they actually built a more powerful model that was comparable to OpenAI using commodity hardware, and there's also Qwen, which is another one out there. So it looks like these open source models are becoming more powerful as well. And there are many companies that are promoting these open source models as a viable alternative to the frontier models, because the performance gap has actually shrunk between them. So why not use, if you are a smaller company that cannot afford the cost of these expensive frontier models, you can use an open source one and get comparable results.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Ravi. So now that we've had quite an extensive conversation about the different LLM models, how about the data angle?
Well, if you're going to have independence from the LLMs, you better have independence for your data as well. So you don't want to tie your data architecture to like a single monolithic repository or structure where you have tied to that one to provide all your LLM models. So that can impose your restriction in your neutrality of selecting whichever LLM you want based on the cost and use case. So it is important to have the flexibility from the data perspective as well, making sure that you're able to provide the data from any different sources to the, which I call as the right data to the LLMs. And also to be able to provide it with the right context. So the data alone doesn't tell the entire story. You need to provide the context, and that actually comes from the data. And you need to have this data architecture supply the context as well. And finally, in terms of now that we are talking about agentic AI, these things can run loose. So they need to be guarded, bounded by certain guardrails, so that way they don't run amok. So it is important that the data architecture be able to support the data in real time, providing it with context and guardrails.
Wow, that's a great answer, Ravi. And I mean, having flexibility and context at the core of it is definitely very crucial. And as you mentioned, guardrails is another important aspect. And that brings me to my next question. So what type of data architecture is best suited to get the right data to support switching between different LLM models if needed?
As I mentioned, you need to have the flexibility in the data architecture. And to me, a logical data architecture provides that level of flexibility. The opposite of logical is having a physical repository, so which means you have to move the data into this one particular place and be tied to that particular one. But a logical architecture does provide the flexibility of being able to abstract the underlying models, so that way you can swap in and out without the consumers knowing that they are going to any model itself. And one of the important aspects of that abstraction is the dynamic routing aspect itself, which is, instead of you having to determine which model to use or which providers to use, the software itself can determine based on the use case. So if you're building a itinerary for a vacation in Hawaii, it can use a lower powered model so that way it doesn't burn too many tokens. But if you're running some kind of a heavy mathematical computation like a drug discovery, identifying the molecule and so on, so that can run in a high powered model, so it uses the commensurate one. So the platform itself can handle that routing seamlessly.
I think model neutrality in terms of like flexibility, fluidity is at the core of our conversation today. And now as we reach towards the end of our discussion, can you summarize the benefits of model neutrality for our listeners, please?
Sure. Yeah. So there are three benefits that come to my mind to kind of summarize across all these challenges that we saw and the solutions in place, which is one, the customers need to be able to continue their operations uninterrupted. So we don't want to find like the small company that had the electricity pulled out. So you want to be able to run your operations, especially in the future when you have agentic. You want those to be uninterrupted as well. So you need to be able to have this vendor neutrality. So that way you can change from one vendor to another or one model to another. So that is very important, the operations to continue. The second one I would say is pairing the right model with the right use case. So we talked about the PhD and the kindergartner example, and you want to make sure that you're using the right level of token spend for the right use case. Otherwise, you might end up burning your money like Uber or Microsoft, and you might be left with the unaccomplished objectives with the AI. And the last one, which I called as the most important one, is avoiding the vendor lock-in. By tying yourself at the hip with the particular vendor, you can guarantee that your prices are going to go up in the future. So you'd never want to do that. So you want to have the flexibility that you can bargain from one vendor to another, so that way the prices stay low. So those are the three benefits I can think of.
Wonderful, Ravi. Right from, you know, real-time stories, things we are listening to on the news, cautionary tales. This was a great episode about model neutrality, about companies being agnostic to the usage of different LLM models. So here, if there's one key takeaway from our conversation, I believe it's this, that the biggest AI risk isn't choosing the wrong model, it's losing the capability to choose. So, you know, like where digital sovereignty means building a multi-model ecosystem backed by a data architecture that supports true portability.
That's very much true, Neha, that you want to have this LLM neutrality. And that's where I think the industry will go next.
I totally agree with you. So thank you for this great conversation, Ravi. It was wonderful speaking to you. And thanks again for joining us on the show.
Yeah, it was great having this discussion, Neha. I really enjoyed it.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning into AI Data Bytes. Don't forget to visit denodo.com for more insights and resources on mastering your enterprise AI strategy. We'll see you on the next episode.